Here at the National Ethanol Conference with me is Brooke Coleman, who is the executive director of the Advanced Ethanol Council. And Brooke, we had a great meeting here. What do you think about some of the things that we heard, especially about where we're going with advanced ethanol?
Well, I think it's one of the great things about this meeting is we're past the point where everybody is spinning and over-promising, and we're getting back to what the industry has to offer, and that's exciting. It might be a more sober conversation and less fun at times, but it's nice to work with the industry and know that the projects we're talking about are going in the ground and are going to produce fuel. And that's the biggest thing, getting our industry off the zero and starting to prove to people that you can make money this way.
Now, you had a great panel where you talked to three of the leading advanced ethanol, advanced biofuels producers. Tell me about some of the things that came out of that panel.
Well, the first commitment we made right out of the gate was that we weren't going to spin. And we openly acknowledged the elephant in the room, and that is that some of the numbers that people were talking about are bigger than we can expect in the immediate term. We also acknowledged that while the RFS grows linearly and aggressively over time, the industry grows more like a hockey stick. It's very slow at the beginning, and then there's an explosion at the end. And we've seen that work its way out with regard to corn ethanol. The other thing that we were starting to do is we're starting to talk a little more openly about our numbers, about our cost of production. And when you start seeing cost of production numbers, you know, $1.60, $1.70, $1.90, $2.10, you start getting into the zone where, yeah, you know, you still have to attract the capital to build the plant. The plant's expensive. You got to work out the kinks. But when you start signaling it, you can start doing fuel at that price. Investors start to get a little more interested. So I expect the industry to do some slow growth over the next couple of years, and we'll just try to keep the politics to a minimum, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Well, there was a lot of talk about the need for financing, the need for capital, and the need for a consistent policy in order to get that. Tell me about that and how the industry feels right now with the, you know, you've got the tax credit expiring at the end of the year, and you really haven't produced, as they made the point at the panel, it doesn't do any good. That tax credit doesn't do any good unless you're producing gallons.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that people don't understand about our tax credits and our tax incentives are they're level setting a marketplace that is tilted decidedly in favor of fossil fuel investments. So you heard the API representative say, well, what we get is not a subsidy. What we get is a cost recovery mechanism. Well, that's both our depreciation and our producer tax credit are cost recovery mechanisms. And so our cost recovery mechanisms are subsidies and theirs aren't. So we're quite amused by that spin. Yeah. So what we have to do is we have to tell that story. It's not really about going after oil or saying what they get is bad. It's more along the lines of, well, you know, if you're a policymaker and you care about innovation, you care about competing in a global, you know, the global marketplace for clean energy and clean fuels, then you can't have a tax system that basically tells anybody with $200 million to go invest in deep water and shale. And that's the reality of what we have right now. And the oil industry is going to spin it however they want, and because they want to keep doing what they're doing. But it's our job, and it's on us to go and explain what's really going on.
Are the loan guarantees helping?
The loan guarantees, so that's... So people, first of all, people don't totally understand what a loan guarantee is. They call them grants. They're not grants. They're loans. You got to repay them. And the repayment rate on loan guarantees, both the DOE and USDA, is up in the high 90s. And so these haven't been people focus on the negative, the Solyndras. But what loan guarantees do is they reduce the risk of the initial capital investment in a marketplace that is controlled by OPEC. And so you're going to, by virtue of the fact that we're dependent on one source of fuel, you're going to have investors that just might prefer putting their money in real estate or, you know, information technology if you don't have loan guarantees that protect the investment a little bit. And so that's really what they do, and they're very important. They have to be administered in a way that don't break our backs. And we understand why USDA and DOE are being careful, but at the same time, there's got to be a real focus on that sweet spot where we don't have to spend a couple million and 2 years of our life trying to get it done. But I tell you, USDA does it in an incredible way. They're very good at it. They understand the marketplace. They don't, you know, you don't have to explain it to them, and they really have a successful program that's worth extending.
Anything else on your mind here? here as we close this conference, and what you're going to be doing when you get back to work?
Well, it's all about, you know, the renewable fuel standard and tax this year, and the EPA has what they need with regard to flexibility and legal authority to keep doing what they're doing. They designed a great program. The credit waiver system's working, and they have more than enough ammo to hold the line, and we're going to help them with that. On the tax side, we're going to go tell a story about what's really going on in the marketplace from an investment perspective, and we'll see where it gets us.
All right. Thank you very much. Brooke Coleman here at the National Ethanol Conference. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.